It's time for Twig This Week in Google. A little preview coming up of Google I.O. It's next week. And we'll talk about self-driving cars. How safe are they? Jeff Jarvis is coming up along with Kevin Marks. It's time for Twig.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twig.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by CacheFly, CacheFly.com. This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 301, recorded Wednesday, May 20th, 2015. Cat Takeover. This Week in Google is brought to you by FreshBooks, the super simple cloud accounting and invoicing solution designed to help small business owners save time billing and get paid faster. Try it free at FreshBooks.com/twig. And by LegalZoom. If you're looking to get a trademark, copyright, or provisional patent application or more, LegalZoom can help you get started the right way. LegalZoom is not a law firm, but can connect you with an independent attorney. Visit LegalZoom.com and use the offer code TWIG in the referral box at checkout this month for your special discount. And by Braintree. If you're working on a mobile app and searching for a simple payment solution, check out Braintree. With one simple integration, you can offer your customers every way to pay, period. To learn more and for your first $50,000 in transactions fee-free, go to BraintreePayments.com/twig. It's time for our Twig This Week in Google. Hello, everybody. Leo Laporte here with Mr. Jeffrey Jarvis from the CUNY Labs in beautiful downtown New York, New York.
Meatballs make you mellow. That was a very mellow beginning.
I am mellow. I've been eating meatballs. No, you know why I'm mellow? Well, we'll talk about it in a second. Let me introduce Kevin. Kevin Marks is also here. We love Kevin from his garden. The chirping birds signal the arrival of spring. Or of the new tone extension for Google Chrome. Hi, Kevin. Kevin, a Googler, an Appler, a British telecommer, a Salesforcer, and now he's out.
A gardener.
Now Indie.
Indie Web.
Is
a wonderful thing. We're going to talk a little bit about some Indie Web stuff. But the reason I'm a little mellow, it's not merely mellow, I'm kind of sad because this is Letterman's last night. And boy, I remember Carson's last night. Remember Bette Midler sang one for my baby, one for the road.
It's the end of the, you know, Carson was the comic model for my father's generation.
Yes.
Letterman for our generation.
Our generation. Yours, mine. Very much.
And I would argue Jon Stewart for Son
yes,
Jakes.
I think you're right.
But Letterman definitely was the voice we tried to emulate in comedy.
Yeah.
And then telling a joke and a story and an attitude. And he changed, you know, he just did so much. He, you know, I feel bad to this day about the whole Leno thing. But in the end, I think what today this proves right now is that he won in the end.
I think so.
He's much more respected, much more loved, much more of an innovator. Leno turns out to be a blowhard, buffoon, bore, lump of nasty humanity.
I'm kind of with you. And it's funny because Dave's known for being kind of cranky and snarky and
Dave
sarcastic. But there was this, just as with Johnny, there was an undercurrent of kind of Midwest, good old boy, nice guy.
And the thing about, I think Dave started was and this is Howard Stern for me too, is honesty.
Yes.
Leno is just one big fake plastic
showbiz.
Bob.
He was the old showbiz. And that's what Letterman was an antidote to in the 80s and the 90s.
Absolutely.
And was to that whole showbiz thing. He always kind of, you know, deprecated that and hated it.
So I just put up two letters that Dave sent me when I was a TV critic. These are my most prized possessions.
Where'd you put them?
As a tweet.
Oh,
they're very minor, but they are my absolute prized possessions.
All right.
Find it?
Under other as a twit tweet. Okay, there you go. It's on the, you mean on the Twitter?
There's a Twitter tweet thing. Yes.
What did he say?
So he said, I just wanted to thank you for saying such nice things about me. I appreciate the support. This is when he was going through the Leno fight and losing the Tonight Show.
Kind of blows me that was 22 years ago.
Isn't it amazing?
Blows me away. It's like, what?
That was NBC letterhead. This is CBS letterhead just thanking me for a review of the show. So, I mean, it's not your friend, Dave. He hated critics. He wouldn't even let us into the show.
Yeah.
I went there once and we weren't allowed in. Despised us. But it's still, I have such respect for him. And to have gotten within a mile of him is amazing. So I'm going to miss you, Dave. Even though I was too old to stay up late to watch you.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's the sad story is none of us watched it.
Well, and now who watches Jimmy or Colbert? We're going to watch them all on John Oliver and John Stewart. Watch them. No, not even TiVo. We watch the best bits on YouTube.
On YouTube, yeah.
I must admit, I'm being quiet here because I barely watch any of these things and only have the loosest idea of Letterman and the thing. I mean, I understand the cultural
legacy
the deal. Of it. But.
Yeah, I mean, Carson really was the kind of show where everybody watched it and then you kind of wanted to talk about it the next morning, right? It was a water cooler conversation. And so for some reason, it really was must watch, even though it was really late at night. But I think the habit of late night television viewing kind of died out. Probably thanks to TiVo and VHS and stuff.
I mean, Jimmy and Jimmy are both good. They're both wonderful. But what young person watches anything scheduled?
Right. Nobody. And thank God that saved Saturday Night Live because there was usually only one or two good skits. And so the fact that you just watch the clip really saves you hours of wasted time every week. I'm going to miss John Stewart. I think when's his last show or did he already have it?
No, it's coming up.
I think I'll have the same kind of feeling, although for our generation, because Letterman was on for 33 years, he's really we started watching in our 20s, right? So that's really why it means so much, I think, to our generation in particular.
Yeah.
Yeah. You young people will know when Conan retires, you guys will understand. Colbert's taking over. I think that's going to be interesting. Is he going to be Colbert or Colbert?
Colbert.
So he will keep
without the Colbert character.
Without the character. I'm dying to see what he's like without the character.
I think he'll be good. I was talking about this with Jake last night. He's a little nervous about it. But I think he's very... Yeah. I mean, Jake. Thanks to Jake, I went to see the show. And he does the pre-warm-up stuff.
Yeah.
He's quick. He's clever. He's smart.
Oh, I love Conan. He started with Letterman. He's one of his writers. And then, of course, John Oliver, who is the dark horse who surprised everybody, except me, because I listened to his Bugle podcast for years.
Yeah.
The funniest podcast ever. And so I knew that Oliver was a gem, although I was a little disheartened when HBO so blatantly copied The Daily Show.
Yes. Though I think he's found his niche as a horse show.
It's structurally different. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's weekly, and it's actually almost a documentary show, which is very interesting.
Yeah. He takes on a big topic, and which is risky because most of the topics really work. His school testing one was great, but not everyone is the gem, and he's committed to doing a 12-minute gem, and that's hard.
It's hard, but boy, he's made a big difference in our world.
Yeah,
I think many people create net neutrality. Yeah, give him credit to turning around the net neutrality conversation.
Yep.
And he did one on patents, software patents, and another bad patents recently.
He's taken on some big sacred cows. He did the piece he did on testing a couple of weeks ago. Really I hope made people aware of what is going on in education in the United States. It's not good. It's not good at all. I love the birds. They're really they're active. Must be mating season. That's not chirp. That's Kevin.
Wait. Except that we've had the nests have hatched. There were nests in our canopy here, but they seem to have hatched.
We need some cats to cut down the population.
Oh, we've got a cat. Cat's been by. I've got cats and dogs and birds here, so it's going to be an entire Tom and Jerry show.
Next week, Jeff will be in studio with us because he's coming to town. Google I.O. starts a week from tomorrow.
Yay.
And already some rumors... according to Bloomberg, Google will be unveiling a new photo service separated from Google Plus. This would be just another nail in Google Plus's coffin. Yeah, it makes me sad. I was sad when Buzz closed.
I was at when I was at Newsgeist in Helsinki, which was a news thing that Google did to lube some squeaky wheels in Europe. But it's Googlers and it's news people, and I did my standard joke about how, you know, I still like Google Plus. It always gets a laugh. It is a constant laugh line now. But I like it.
I do too. And I like it more because it's there's fewer people there. It turns out I realized that really this I like social networks when it's just people like me. And as soon as normal people get in there, it's like, come on, I don't need any more upworthy posts. And you're starting to see that in Google Plus. You're starting to see that same kind of Facebook resharing of, you know, garbage. And that to me is the beginning of the end for any social network. It's interesting. Twitter has gone post. Post that. Now Twitter is something completely different. I don't know what Twitter is, but it's something completely different. So the new photo tool, which will let users, according to Bloomberg, post images to Facebook and Twitter.
Yay, at last.
Finally. Will greater autonomy, photo tool, more freedom to take on rivals. In other words, because Facebook and Twitter were seen as competitors to Google Plus, you couldn't share to them.
Well, there was some mutual bad blood there as well.
I mean, yeah, that's probably true. Yeah.
The other thing that's changed or was announced was that Google is indexing Twitter again, which is another one of these strategy tax things that they. I think there was at least partly Google and partly Twitter. But the fact they couldn't come into agreement on that was a big shame. I suspect that was infighting within Google as well.
Yeah, because Google had the fire hose, then Twitter turned it off, I think, or they couldn't come to an agreement.
Well, they had Google real-time search, which was primarily Twitter, but was obviously valuable for them as they were ramping up Plus and other things as well.
Yeah, they wanted signals,
And then they couldn't make a deal on the fire hose. Twitter asked for too much money, Google got too grumpy, something. Or there were some Google Plus strategy tax. I think that's quite possible that was part of it too. And so that ended up with them getting rid of Google real-time search completely, which was a shame, because that was actually a useful thing. I don't know if you remember using that, but it was something quite helpful.
And if someone's going to act irrationally these days, I'm going to bet it's Twitter over Google.
Yeah.
No, I think it was. I think there's, you know, we can see some of this as Plus is being de-emphasized, that there was definitely some strategy tax coming from there as well. And it's certainly with this photos discussion and with the Twitter fire hose thing as well. There was definitely a, we should be using our thing, not their thing, from the Plus group. Now, I suspect that wasn't what the search group wanted, and that ended up being one of those internal infighting things. Because otherwise, you know, why would they have got rid of the real-time search thing if the goal was to put Google Plus in the real-time search?
So how do I get this new thing? Do I search for? I see on Search Engine Land the story there was hashtag iZombie.
You have to search on mobile, apparently.
Oh, it doesn't work from desktop.
What the report said was that it's mobile only at the moment, and I wasn't even sure it was everywhere yet.
Oh, let me try it on my S6.
Hashtag iZombie.
Well, let me do hashtag David Letterman, because that's trending right now on Twitter. So presumably there'd be a lot of content there. David Letterman. I hate having to. So does it? Do you have to use a hashtag if you're going to do this search to get the carousel?
I've only seen the examples. So
here we go. Popular on Twitter. Here's the carousel. Yeah.
Okay.
Interesting. So that's above the normal search results.
That's a very high placement. Wow.
Yeah. Well, you don't get much higher than that. It's number one.
No, but it's also a lot of real estate.
Yeah. Look at this. And you get a follow link. Can you zoom in a little bit? I think it's hard to read right now, and my camera's too far away. But you get at the bottom, you get a follow link that says more tweets for David Letterman. So it's popular on Twitter, and then you get this carousel, and these are tweets. I mean, this is James and Carla Murray. It's just somebody on Twitter.
Wow.
But it's weirdly curated. I'm getting KRQE News 13.
Yeah, I'm getting that too.
What's that?
I don't know why. And here's some guy named Steve.
Who's an ass.
Who says, good riddance, David Letterman. Please take
Steve.
Please take Jimmy Kimmel with you.
What do you do? What do you, Steve? You go to funerals and you say, good riddance?
Sad, isn't that? That's what's wrong with Twitter, unfortunately, is everybody it makes you feel like everything you have, every little thought that goes through your head is important. And everybody's, you know, like has to weigh in on everything, however trivial or silly or irrelevant their thoughts are. A lot of grown men crying this month, says Sarah. Yeah, I agree. Diane says, look what I found. David Letterman sponges from NBC Burbank in the 80s.
Oh, jeez. You know what? And Steve's put Bible verses in his Twitter bio. Nice and Christian of you, Steve.
Hey, good riddance. You should have been dead long ago.
Others, man. Do one to others.
So I wonder, you know, and then if I do more tweets, this is a link from Google back to Twitter. So.
Oh, okay.
So that's not really more Google search results. And then you get the Google search results, and the hashtag turns into the knowledge box and all of that. Wow. Wait a minute. Holy cow. So you get CBS. That's what you should get, right? Right under the tweets. David Letterman's knowledge graph with, you know, Wikipedia stuff. And then a link to Twitter, his Twitter account. Boy, talk when you change tunes, Google, you go all the way. Twitter is very important now.
Yeah, if I just search for David Letterman, I don't get the...
Look how far down YouTube is. This will give lie to all the European EU folks who say that they favor their own. I mean, YouTube could have very reasonably been on top there.
Did you put the hashtag in to find this?
I did. Hashtag David Letterman.
Okay, so
plain David Letterman won't do it.
No, that's kind of a signal, I guess, that, I want to see tweets.
Say if you search for The Voice, because that was last night, had a lot of Twitter stuff in it.
I'll give it a shot by doing The Voice one word. See if we see tweets. Nope.
Oh, I just did hashtag The Voice. No.
The hashtag didn't even do it, huh?
Nope.
Huh. Here we go. Wait a minute. So if I scroll down far enough, there's NBC, there's the knowledge graph, here's episodes, YouTube, Facebook, and then tweets about The Voice hashtag on Twitter. But that brings you back to Twitter.
I suppose the thing is,
So that's not a search result.
But they use hashtags for voting, so it would be you'd have to look for whatever it is, save whatever their names were.
That's why I used David Letterman, because that was a trending topic, so I knew that would...
Right.
If anything was going to work, that would work. So you'd want to use the trending topics, I guess.
It's interesting. But it also implies that there is a strong time component, because I imagine that would be higher last night.
I, for one, wasn't crazy about the idea of including tweets in search results, because tweets are kind of unpredictable.
Well, as we just saw.
Right. So I feel like, I don't know, is that really what I want when I go a-searching? But maybe, I mean...
I don't think that... I think that not that prominent. I think it's kind of a like a side one box, maybe.
Right. Google researchers create amazing time lapses from public photos. This is kind of an auto-awesome thing, but not to photos uploaded to Google, but wow. This is out in the public domain. A team from Google and the University of Washington have created it's completely automated way to create time-lapse videos... They scour through Flickr and Picasa and other photo sharing sites. They sort them by geographic location, looking for widely snapped landmarks.
Oh, yeah, this was amazing. Yeah.
Order the photos by date. And then obviously you have to then modify the photos so that everything matches up. And
the video below has a creeping ice there.
Time-lapse mining from internet photos. This is University of Washington.
It's going to go through.
These people take pictures of glaciers, right? But they have to color correct and match, and then you can actually see the glacier melting. Wow. Here's an example result showing the retreat of the Greek stars. Wow, that's really neat. I mean, it's not a good thing, but here's the building we just saw. And you can see when you see the timeline, all the images that they're using. Holy cow.
What computers can do.
It's amazing.
This is interesting because it's like the thing Microsoft did, but in time rather than in space.
They did PhotoSynth, which made a 360 out of multiple pictures.
From multiple people.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas this is doing it across time, which is,
cool.
That's a very nice piece of work. I like that.
Thank you, science and math.
Yeah, I mean, also, was that an annual cycle of the glacier, or was that the same
that
time
every
year?
That was from 2000, 10 years.
Okay.
So, you know, I would say...
glaciers, like, do melt and grow and shrink every year.
Yeah. But over 10 years, I think that's a little more significant.
Yeah, you can see a bigger trend.
Yeah. There's definitely a trend.
Because yeah, years ago, when I was doing multimedia stuff, one of the things we did was a thing called Erdsicht, which was an exhibition in a museum where we did time-lapse stuff, but it was all satellite time-lapse stuff. And that we had polar ice caps and ozone holes, things like that.
Interesting.
You know, long time series of those. Yeah. But it's great to see ground-based stuff.
You merge,
it's obviously easier if you've got a satellite because it stays in the same place.
You merge big data, the fact that we now store everything and it's all kind of accessible, with computation, some pretty sophisticated computation. It's very interesting what you can get. It's not just the one. It's not just having big data. It's being able to parse it, to massage it, to get something out of it. Maps was hacked again.
Oh, badly.
By jerky jerks.
Yep.
I thought Google had fixed this. Boy, this is just, this is shocking. And it's not like exactly peeing on an iPhone. This happened yesterday. So Google, which had said we are going to change the who we let change maps and so forth. We're going
to
change.
So we lose the opportunity to get people to contribute to
so sad.
Public knowledge.
There's trolls everywhere. Jeez Louise.
But isn't this an indexing thing rather than a labeling thing, isn't it?
Oh, so it's using a different, searching for a particular phrase. So this is kind of Google bombing.
Yes.
It's the opposite. So they aren't using the Maps tool. I misunderstood. Because
there was a weird thing that people was search Google Maps for your Twitter handle and see where it puts you.
Right.
And for mine, it puts me with Tantec, apparently.
What a surprise.
Which is kind of fun.
That's probably accurate. So wait a minute. So you search Maps for your Twitter handle.
Yes.
And since Twitter is, if you turn it on, and I do... I'm right here.
So yeah, you are quite likely to be accurate because you.
I tweet with the location turned on, so it does.
Right.
Yeah.
But a lot of other people were finding very 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 strange ones. There was somebody was collecting them.
Let's try Jeff Jarvis. See where does Jeff live?
I'm about to do that.
I'll do it for you, Jeff.
This is going to freak people out. Watch. I'm counting down. I just started the countdown clock to freak out in Germany.
What? Freak out in Germany? Why? What's going on?
they pinpointed where I am. Of course, you tweeted exactly where you are.
Yeah, you already tweeted that. Let's see where Jason is. You're here, Jason.
A little off.
So this is the nearest. Is this the nearest, the most recent tweet in time? Or is it based on all your tweets?
I'm not quite sure what it's based on because...
You're not with Tantec now.
I was searching things and getting very strange results. Like they were searching for Ed Miliband MP and getting...
Yeah, because you're not with Tantec in the San Francisco at the Panhandle now. So it's not your most recent. But do you have geolocation turned off?
I turn it on and off randomly.
Let's see where POTUS is. Oh, he's at the White House.
Did I get that right? Okay, so maybe they have iterated this a bit.
You're just messed up. Dr. Mom says she's... is it Dr. Mom on Twitter, Dr. Mom? That should be. She said, no, that's a company called Dr. Mom Presentations. That's not you.
Is there an underscore in there somewhere? Dr.
Yeah, but I put the underscore. What, Dr. Mom, what's your Twitter handle? There's a little delay between when she hears this and when she can put that in. Oh, well, she's in our chat room right now. That's kind of interesting. Is that related to the Google Twitter relationship? It is Dr. Mom.
I'm not sure. I think this was a... There was a little meme of this yesterday. People were searching for politicians find strange things, especially UK ones, where they were turning up in very odd places.
POTUS, of course, is President Clinton. President Clinton. It will be President Clinton's account, I think. Did you see Bill Clinton tweeting? So Barack Obama tweets from @POTUS.
Oh, great.
Finally, after 6 years, they've given me my own Twitter account. Bill Clinton, what does Clinton ask? He says... So is it yours or does it pass on to the next owner? I've got
to the house.
Does it go with the house? I got a candidate in mind.
and Obama comes back and says, something like, I don't know, but is somebody interested in the FLOTUS?
Cause of course, Clinton will be, will be the first gentleman, we've learned, by the way. If
Oh, is that what it is?
Yeah. They've good said. Question, Bill Clinton. The handle comes with the house. No, anyone.
So he will be F. Godis.
F. Godis, yeah.
I wonder if they've reserved that yet.
I wonder, how come POTUS was available?
Well, because Twitter has the ability to keep people off.
So they kept people off of that one, hoping someday.
Yes, F. Godis has been assigned.
Ah, there you go. First guy. That kind of does dual purpose. It could be first gentleman or first guy.
Oh, among those walking into Letterman's finale, Jerry Seinfeld, Chris Rock, Steve Martin, Tina Fey, Alec Baldwin, Jim Carrey, Peyton Manning.
Oh, my. That's a pretty good lineup.
Yeah, it is.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we got more. We got Kevin Marks and the Birds.
Oh, good.
We got Jeff Jarvis and the Lettas. And we got here in the Brick House, FreshBooks. FreshBooks was a lifesaver for me when I was a freelancer still and sending invoices, or not, truthfully, not sending invoices out at the end of the month. I couldn't bring myself to. Oh, it was such a pain. I had my invoices in Microsoft Word. I wasn't using Excel. It wasn't that sophisticated. It's just a pain. And every day, every month on the 30th, I'm supposed to make my invoices, send them off. And this, you know, the problem was, if you don't make your invoices, you don't get paid. Fortunately, Amber MacArthur knew about FreshBooks. This is when I was going to Toronto 1 week a month to do the show up there. Had to bill Rogers not only for my, you know, my visits, but for expenses for hotel and meals and airfare. And that's just such a pain. She told me about FreshBooks, what a lifesaver it was. First of all, I immediately designed a good-looking invoice that could be emailed. Made it easy for me to fill out it. Just click, 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 make an invoice. It meant I got paid faster. In fact, on average, FreshBooks users get paid 5 days faster, partly because the invoice has a pay me button, which lets your client use credit cards and almost all the, payment methods online. And, you know, the truth is clients do want to pay you. It's just as much a pain in the butt for them to do the check as it is for you to send the invoice. So make it easy for them. Make it easy for you. Get paid faster. It's the greatest. And incidentally, with the FreshBooks apps, you can capture and manage your expenses, take pictures of the receipts, track your billable hours. It's so cool. And if you ever need help, they have the best support ever from their offices in Toronto. The FreshBooks support rock stars. Getting started is easy. It's totally free for your first month. No obligation. You're going to love it. Go to FreshBooks.com/twig. Stop doing this manually, please. Do yourself a favor. Come tax time. Your accountant will appreciate it, too, because the reports are great. FreshBooks.com/twig. And where they say, how'd you hear about us? Just put TWIG. Start your 30-day free trial today. FreshBooks.com/twig. Use twig as the where'd you hear about us reference. And we thank you so much for your support, FreshBooks. And thank you for making my life a lot easier for many, many years. Self-driving cars hit the road. Let's hope they don't hit pedestrians in Mountain View this summer. Google said, we're going to put them out there. The speed will be capped at 25 miles an hour. And, you know, it's going to be those little weird Tonka toy rounded little cars that Google showed that have no steering wheel, no accelerator, no brake. But that's illegal. So Google's going to put temporary steering wheel, brake, and accelerator in there along with a human.
That's like being the monkey on the first Sputnik.
It's very similar. Looks like it barely fit like of the dog in that thing.
There's no reason for me to be here.
I don't know. See, if you were in a self-driving car, would you? I feel like we talked about this.
No, I'm just saying the Google employee who has to be
a good
there.
Gig. He'd bring the sandwich, something to read.
Well, I'm working for Google. What are you doing, son? I'm sitting in a car all day.
Braden. Do you think they designed these because this is the right design for this car or just to make people feel better? Asimo, the Sony robot that looks like a small human.
Oh, that's very Chromebook Pixel.
That
light bar on the side, yeah.
Do you think when it hits somebody, it pulses red?
It looks up your name and
I am sorry, I've hit you. So they'll be going through neighborhoods. This is not going to be on highways. They've been doing about 10,000 miles.
Can't hear you, Kevin.
A week. A million autonomous miles on the road. 10,000 autonomous miles a week.
Now so it's effectively a self-driving golf cart, isn't it?
It looks like that. I want a real car.
But it's about the same speed and power as those, and it right. may actually therefore be legal in those terms.
Oh, maybe it is.
That may be one of the reasons it's that shape. But
it's so cute. There's no human in that one.
It also looks less resistant to being crashed into by a random passers-by than the previous Priuses.
There have been, since September, 4 accidents, but in every case, Google says, they were low speed, under 10 miles an hour, and it was the human's fault, not the driver's fault or the car's fault.
So I just put in the rundown, Chris Sacca.
Cowboy shirt
Sacca.
Boy.
Sacca. Is it doing an AMA in Periscope? Yeah.
And I got lucky. You know, I had a friend, James Cham, who at the time was at Best Learn.
So bored of this stuff.
Kind of referred me.
I know, I am too. Shouldn't it be sideways?
You could turn it sideways, I think. But we asked Ben Rubin, the founder of Meerkat, why Meerkat, when it first came out, forced you really to do portrait mode. And he said, because that's native to the phone.
Yeah, if you're watching it on the phone and listening on the phone, it makes sense. It's one of those.
Yeah, it only looks bad on a desktop when you go, why am I looking through a, especially with this particular shot where Sokka is half cut off.
It's a two shot where you can't get both the faces in.
It's a one and a half shot.
They should like lean in from opposite sides of the frame. Two-way thing. No, I mean, this is the eternal problem of TV, which is like, what shape should it be?
Yeah, not that shape. Somebody said, your eyes, you have two eyes. It should be, turn that on its side so you can use your two eyes. I think when you're looking at a phone, that makes perfect sense to me. I don't have any problem with that. But it doesn't work for this particular thing.
Or television. So
why should we care that Sokka is doing a Periscope? Is there some excitement? Nah.
Snakes and funerals.
You know what they did Periscope? The Spotify announcement this morning. The Spotify announcement was not streamed publicly. In New York, press were invited, and Mashable, I think, or Fast Company, decided to Periscope it.
Oh,
interesting, huh? Spotify announced that they are going to do an updated app. This is, you know, what's happening here is everybody. This is the same thing happened before the Apple Watch came out. Everybody is trying to get their bit of the news cycle before Apple announces its streaming music service in June at WWDC. So Spotify is going to do video, which is a big, big deal. And they are also going to feature podcasts, including ours.
This
show and all of the Twit programs will be available audio and video on Spotify. I'll be very interested.
That's really interesting. Any cost to you? They're hosting it?
Oh, yeah. No any cost revenue? To us. I don't know what the deal is. We might get revenue. I don't know. I don't think so because they're not modifying. They're not putting ads in it or anything. They don't do ads. Nor are they taking our ads out, though. So they also announced a new feature, which I really like. If you're a runner, they'll automatically make a playlist that matches your cadence as you run because the phone knows your...
Jesus, I'll get a funeral dirge.
Jeff, you're not running very fast. He said it's like dancing. You wouldn't dance to music that didn't match. You wouldn't dance, you know, one way and have the music be different. So that makes sense. So yeah, we're thrilled to be part of that. We knew about it because we had to provide them with content and make sure it worked and all that stuff. So if you're a Spotify subscriber, good news. Along with all the great music, you'll be able to listen to Twit or Twig, this show.
Twig.
Yeah. Russia threatens to ban Google and Twitter and Facebook over extremist content. There is a move afoot, not just in Russia, look at Great Britain, to mark some kinds of speech so threatening that it's going to be blocked. I hope we don't get to that situation.
I'm sure too. I agree. But it's also, I think just, you know, the nearest excuse to try to ban these things that threaten tyrants.
Well, that's really the real reason. They want to ban it, Russia says, over extremist content, illegal activities. It's that bloggers law that they passed. Yeah. The 2014 legislation requires popular bloggers in Russia to register their real identity with the authorities.
Well, they've did that a while ago, right?
That was last year.
Yeah.
So they're going to use that, though, to also regulate social media. And, of course, David Cameron, we talked about this last week, said in Great Britain.
Very depressing.
That, if you're – it was actually such a depressing quote because it sounded like 1984.
I can't believe that he said that. It was shocking. He said,
let me see if I can find it. Yeah, because I want it's
up to now we've said that as long as you obey the law, we won't bother you. But that's got to change. It was literally. You know,
we've been a passively tolerant society
British history
for too long. For too long, we've been a passively tolerant society saying to our citizens, as long as you obey the law, we'll leave you alone.
Is this Putin or Cameron? It's hard to tell.
David Cameron.
That's David Cameron, which is shocking.
This government will conclusively turn the page on this failed approach. As the party of one nation, we will govern as one nation and bring our country together. This sounds like nationalism to the extreme.
Yeah. Well, one nation has a different nuance in the UK, but it does sound like.
Oh, it does? Okay. Yes.
Yeah. Well, there's a notion of one nation Toryism, which as opposed to divisions between rich and poor. So that's what that's what he's drawing on there. But yeah, from the outside, it does sound like Ein Reich, which is.
Yeah. Ein Reich, ein Volk. And if you say anything against us, well, that's your problem.
Wow. But it's, you know, it is a really, really bad departure, and the open rights group in the UK is sort of ramping up, working out how to deal with this and seeing how they can respond. Because
what is the reaction in the UK?
I'm not in the UK, so I only see what I see through social media. But it was widely heralded as a shocking thing.
Yeah, good.
But it is also, you know, the other half of it is that it is also a shout out to the law and order wing of his party and the UKIP crowd as well. That's the other piece of this.
That's kind of, to me, it sounds like the UKIP rhetoric, the very highly nationalistic rhetoric.
UKIP was very, very shocking for the Conservatives because they won the majority, they won the most seats in the European Parliament last year because the European Parliament is done by.
Then they got one seat in this election?
Partyless PR, whereas the election is done by first past the post, but it did. They got one seat, yes, but they got 5 million votes or something. Eish. So they did affect a lot of results by moving votes around, which is the way things work in the UK. And it worked out in the Conservatives' favour mostly, I think, because they managed to persuade some of the UKIP types to swing back to them rather than vote Labour. But it was. It was a shock result. You know, the pollsters had no idea what was going on because of all these different parties and their model of left right didn't fit anymore. But it was also this sort of there is now this sort of UKIP has moved the rhetoric such that there is this very, very strong anti immigration tone, anti immigration policy, which that sounds very un British to me. But then you know I've been away for a while, so it's hard for me to tell.
Feels like nationalism is growing, and nationalism in Europe has always been a problem. There's a history. There's a bad history. Google wants to put buy buttons on its search result pages in the coming weeks.
This is a slap at Amazon, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like a one click. Google doesn't say anything. This is from the Wall Street Journal.
Right.
But the idea is that the buttons, when you do a search, again on mobile, this is mobile, will accompany sponsored search results or paid search results. You might see, according to this article, a shop on Google heading at the top of the page. The button, though, will not drive you to Google, but drive you to the sponsor, to the advertising,
which will still retailer. Have Europe go berserk because that's been the essence of the fight. That is the essence of the antitrust.
Right.
Is Google and shopping. So it's Google putting a bit of a poke in the eye, though I'm fine with that.
Google won't show buy buttons when shoppers search on desktop computers. Just
why not
on mobile? I think they figure it doesn't matter on desktop. Where they're really facing the battle is in mobile search, right?
But if it's a user, see, this is. But it, I don't think that it's still the same user, and treat me as a user appropriately across all platforms.
What's good for the mobile is good for the game.
Yeah, to some extent.
That's a good point. And it's kind of an inconsistent user experience that way.
Right.
And I don't mind a buy button. It's already an ad. All it's doing is giving me a way to act upon the ad.
But here's what will happen. Oh, Google's promoting its advertisers over neutral listings of shopping services. Yeah, it is. It's called capitalism.
I don't think they're going to complain because this is in paid advertising, not in search results.
That was the same problem: is that Google is promoting its paid advertisers. That's the essence of the suit of the investigation.
Where do you guys come down on
what?
What?
Which suit is this? I missed the actual lawsuit part there.
There's not a lawsuit. There was proposed action. By the EU. Oh no! Wait a minute. Are they investigating?
Oh, it's the antitrust.
Antitrust action.
Exactly. This. They're going after them. They'll charge them 6% of their revenue.
You didn't hear about that one? That's a good one.
Well, it might help pay off Greece's debt.
Probably would.
Yeah.
Internet.org and the EFF. We talked last week about Zuckerberg. You're going to Facebook on Tuesday. You can ask Mark about this.
Yeah.
Internet.org is not just Facebook, but others proposing a way to bring the internet to undeveloped nations with the support of Facebook and others, and it would give them kind of a special version of the internet. Remember, Mark Zuckerberg addressed this notion that it wasn't net neutral. EFF now has published an article. Internet.org is not neutral, not secure. That's a new argument. And not the internet. Internet.org offers people from developing countries free mobile access to selected websites and has been pitched as a philanthropic initiative to connect 2/3 of the world who don't yet have internet access. The EFF says, we agree that global digital divide should be closed, but is this the right way to do it?
So what is the right way to do it? That's Zuckerberg's point, is that you can't give away the whole internet for free. That's just not going to work.
Right.
There are commercial interests here. They open it up to more than Facebook. And the original rumor was it was just going to be Facebook for free.
It was Facebook and Wikipedia. Right? Wikipedia was the fig leaf.
Wikipedia, that's right. That's right.
Fig leaf, well done.
Yeah. Get all that inaccurate Wikipedia stuff. Arr.
You see, you got Wikipedia. Now, if they did WikiLeaks, then I'd be impressed.
Yeah. And so they open up to more. And so what do you prefer? I certainly get the argument. I'm all net neutrality. But does the fundamentalism go too far if it prevents something here? And so I think that this is kind of the argument I had with Matthew Ingram, is when you say, I just don't like that. Stop. Take a deep breath and say, well, what are the terms that might make you like it? What are the principles that you would expect Facebook to accede to that would make this acceptable to bring free internet to a lot more people? Are there any other circumstances in which you could imagine that happening? That's the conversation we ought to have. And I think it's something about Facebook being open to other services, which they're doing. I don't know what the limitations are. Is it too limited? Let's get into the arguments. Or are you just saying that no, Facebook cannot give away free internet access, full stop?
Well, but get ready for this.
That doesn't make sense to me.
You can debate that, and maybe reasonable people can. But get this.
Of course, I'm unreasonable, so that's why I'm debating.
No, I'm on your side on that one. But maybe you can make an argument, hey, better that than nothing. But internet.org prevents encrypted HTTPS connections. It's a proxy server. Traffic must pass through, and some devices like Android phones that have the technical ability to make encrypted connections through the proxy server will be prevented from doing that. Internet.org's Android app can automatically bring up the interstitial warning directly on the phone by using the app to analyze links. And more importantly, traffic must pass for phones. Okay, the most inexpensive feature phones that can't run an Android app don't support phone-based warnings that would say, hey, this is not a safe connection. It's not encrypted. For these phones, traffic must pass through Internet.org's proxy unencrypted, which means any information users send or receive from Internet.org services could be read by local police or national intelligence agencies.
What do you imagine the rationale for that is?
It's because these are low-end phones.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what the...
It's also because it's very hard to proxy HTTPS because that's right. The point of HTTPS.
Right.
Yes.
Because in order to proxy, you have to man in the middle of it, whereas you can proxy and HTTP because it's in plain text.
And so, Kevin, you have to proxy this because that's the only way to make it free, because it's a free connection to versus a paid connection?
I think it's a rewriting proxy. I think that's my understanding of it. So it's
here's
doing,
the deal.
It's transforming the pages.
Let me read this. Compliance, blah, 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 with the guide announcement, blah, 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 will be reviewed by Internet.org team, which make the site available. So there's a compliance standard, guidelines. Any website operator could submit their site for inclusion in Internet.org, provided it meets the guidelines. Those guidelines are neutral as to subject matter, but do impose technical limitations intended to ensure the sites don't overly burden the carrier's network and that they'll work on inexpensive feature phones as well as modern smartphones. The site will have to be then routed through the Internet.org proxy server, which allows the sites to be zero rated by participating mobile phone operators, allows the automatic stripping out of content that violates the guidelines. That includes images bigger than a megabyte, videos, VoIP calls.
Oh, that's why it has to go through the proxy,
right?
So we can do that filtering.
It's going to strip out Flash, Java applets, even JavaScript, and inserts an interstitial warning if a user attempts to leave Internet.org's zero-rated portion of the Internet. In other words, you got this for free, but if you leave this, you're going to be billed for data charges. So you still have access, in some cases, to a broader Internet, but you'll get billed for that, whereas Internet.org is free.
Right. I mean, to some extent, do you remember the Google proxy?
Yeah.
Google.com/GWT/N?
Yeah.
So that was an old one they wrote a few years back for when mobile browsers were really crap. And it takes your web pages and strips them down into a nice lean version. And it works. It does a fairly good job of making sense of the pages. But it will rewrite the HTML. It'll dump out the styling and the scripts. It'll make the image make smaller versions of the image and that sort of thing. So it's a way of getting some kind of rendition of the page on a mobile connection. And so there, Internet.org is doing something similar to that. And to some extent, so is the new Facebook Instant Pages thing is doing something similar to that. It's reading the HTML and rendering it in a different way. And you can argue this in different directions. So you can say a rewriting proxy can be a useful thing because it's, you know, to some extent, readability is that some of the reader type apps do that. They would make a more stripped down version of the page. It's easy for you to make sense of. But it's stripping out things that the sending site put there for a reason. But in another sense, that is kind of the spirit of the web. The spirit of the web is you declare a bunch of stuff, and then the browser makes a choice about which part of it to render to you. So that is doing that as an answer is one way of doing it. But obviously, if you still downloading the whole thing and then deciding which bits to display, you're still creating a lot of data transmission to do that. So they're basically doing that in between and sending something different through. And the question there is, how does that affect the web in between? So there is some nuance here, because there's obviously value. You don't want to outlaw sites that transform other sites. That would be a bad idea. So like this Google proxy or some of the indie web tools that we have that do feed reading off HTML pages, things like that. But there is a challenge when this is being sold as this is the internet to people who don't have much of an alternative. It's like, oh, Facebook works great, but everything else works in some slightly damaged way is a bit problematic.
EFF concludes, while we applaud Facebook's efforts to encourage more websites to provide support for low-end feature phones by stripping out heavy content, that would be the right way to do it, by the way, is to put the burden on the site. To offer a special version. We would like to see Internet.org try harder to achieve its very worthy objective of connecting the remaining two-thirds of the world to the Internet. We have confidence it would be possible to provide a limited free internet access service that is secure.
Oh, okay. So here's the principles. Okay, good.
Doesn't rely on Facebook and its partners to maintain a central list of approved sites. That's the set, you know, so there's two things. It's insecure, but also Facebook's a gatekeeper. Until then, internet.org will not be living up to its promise or its name.
Well, this is a case where...
What the hell?
Oh.
Kevin's been eaten.
Whoa.
And all the... Notice the birds have gone quiet as well. It's,
yeah. My God, there's a predator down there. Quick. Super predator.
So I think that does internet.org have an independent board?
I don't know.
I mean, that's what I've long argued. We've had these discussions about Google and cases where, you know, they knock off a shopping site because they think it's spam, and the shopping site argues there ought to be a jury of peers, an independent jury. Same here. Then have a board that makes independent decisions based on principles. What is it that makes free internet for the world okay and acceptable? Which I'm, you know, they're starting to answer that.
How do you feel good about, how do you like dubstep? Apparently, no idea.
That was quite a transition. I mean, these two topics are so close to each other.
So I'm just changing the subject. I'm changing the subject.
Dubstep.
Google.
Can a kind dubstep?
No, I'm just moving on.
Was ist das?
Was ist das dubstep? So you know who Skrillex is?
Oh, because the Skrillex side of me. Yes, okay. But yeah. I was putting that in too. It's funny.
I love it. This is the new Google store, store.google.com, where they sell Nexus phones and Nexus tablets, now has a limited edition Skrillex Live case. Ask Jake about it. Jake will know. It's got special companion wallpaper, the view from Skrillex's satellite. I don't know what the... Skrillex has his own satellite?
It's pretty cool. It has NFC built into the case. So
yeah.
The phone knows which case it has on.
Yeah.
And then reacts.
Each Skrillex Live case is in it. I got to get this. I'm not a Skrillex fan. My son is.
$40.
Each Skrillex Live case is individually numbered and comes with built-in smarts. A customizable shortcut button on the back there is that button gives you one-touch access to your favorite stuff.
It's like a built-in Pressy. Remember Pressy, that Kickstarter?
Yeah. Like you could set it to launch the phone's camera, open any of your apps, of course, go to Skrillex's site, which I bet you is the default. When they do a Yo-Yo Ma case, that's when I'm going to buy one. This is for the Nexus 5, 6, Galaxy S5, Samsung Galaxy S6, and Note 4. I'm going to order it right away, and I'll demonstrate it when it comes in. Wait a minute. They're three different companies, Space Shield, Circuit Bay, and Planet. Or are those
just the styles? Yeah.
Kind of styles, yeah.
Which one should I? What's Circuit Bay? Ooh.
And I saw it because Google retweeted the Google Store Twitter account.
Huh. Which one, chat room, which one should I get? Skrillex Live, Space Shield, Circuit Bay, or Planet? Let's see, Planet. You think my son will have more respect for me if I get one of these cases?
No, he'll say, Dad.
I'm not sure.
I'm leaning towards the Space Shield.
Yes, he'll say Skrillex is so over, Dan.
Yeah. Skrillex is like 2010. Come on, Dad.
Yeah. Yeah. He is kind of, isn't he?
Yeah.
What is he likes now is, I can't remember. All right. Dead Mouse is also gone. Yeah, ask Andrew. Who's the
So he's in Florence at the moment, so
is he? How nice for him.
He's responding.
And here's an article from Wired magazine on how it works. Google and Skrillex. Huh? I like the question. Huh? That is, I think that's editorial. Wait, now, these takeovers. Okay, here. All right. You know, the new thing they do with takeovers is they move the close button around. So you have to, like, really look at the ad to figure out where you get rid of it.
Oh, I know. It's so awful. They hide it.
They move it around.
We got rid of pop-ups, and they're back.
It keeps you guessing for at least, like, 3 seconds so that they can register you as a view, right?
Exactly.
That's exactly what it is.
Where is the X?
Yep.
It's a new game. Oh, Skrillex designed these himself. What a surprise. His real name is Sonny Moore. Phone cases are supposed to be fun, you know. Baron of Bangarang. I really like the really crazy phone cases that are out right now. You see the... I don't know. Is he British? I don't know where he's from.
No, he's from LA.
We did like 20 designs. His favorite was, quote, like Windows 95.
Oh.
It was a super vaporware one.
Oh. He's not even speaking, making sense.
No.
He is a DJ. Is he a DJ or what is he?
Yeah. Yes. He's a
DJ producer. And producer.
He makes music.
DJ, producer, mixer.
I barely told anybody this. I had this really crazy dream when I was really young. I was in my house.
Oh, Lord.
And in my room, this is the dream. And I wake up in the dream and I look out my window and this blue light flies into my backyard. And then moments later, these two aliens open the door to my room.
The dumbening of America.
Like, covering my face under the covers and watching them and just looking at them like so frightened and so afraid. And it was so real. And then they just sort of like walked around me and like stared at me and then left the room.
Why do you think this is a dream?
So I'm saying. That's a real dream, though. Well, it's the realest dream I've ever had. No, super
this
young.
Is
realest
so dream, horrible. Google hopes this is a model for other artists and creators. More edition partners coming. Okay. Somebody at Google, probably Larry Page, really likes Skrillex.
There has been a rumor floating around for a few months now, and Android Police has kind of been all over it, about customizable cases. So I don't know if this ties into that. And one of the rumors actually is using Google Maps to create totally custom cases for Nexus devices and stuff. Huh. So you know, who knows? Maybe this is something that we're going to hear more about at I.O., kind of a broadening of this. This is like a little teaser, and then we get to I.O. You remember... You know, what we just did with Skrillex, now you can do it with Google Maps or whatever. How would you use what?
What do you do? Put on you put on different cases based on your mood.
Yes.
And I can't figure out how.
Buy more cases.
Apparently,
yeah. I don't get it.
I kickstarted. I put some money in this one. I'm a backer. I pledged $109 for the next pack. Didn't we talk about this on the show? A first truly modular smartphone case.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah. See all the little bits and pieces. I'll be trailing bits of my phone case as I walk around.
We'll prepare you for Project Ara when you get that.
Yeah. It's kind of just a warm-up.
Yep.
So what did I get? $109. What? Oh, here it is. Special edition Magenta Next Pack and 4 modules. So the modules, you could have an SD card reader, an amplified speaker, a flashlight, more power, temperature and humidity sensor, hotkeys, USB flash. See, this is better than Skrillex. There's an air quality sensor, a breathalyzer, a laser. There's a backup drive and a dummy slot. My luck, I'll get 2 dummy slots. I don't know. I guess they're funded. Look at this. They wanted $50,000. They got $200,000 and still have 9 days to go. Next pack.
Thanks to schmucks like you.
Thanks to schmucks like... You know, I every once in a while like to go back and look at all the Kickstarter projects.
I know.
That I've backed and never got anything from. Just a reminder of what a true sucker I am.
It's like,
So
did you see the $9 computer one, Chip?
Yeah. Is that a Kickstarter?
That's a Kickstarter.
It's called Clip, I think?
Chip.
Chip, that's it.
I just put the link in the...
Yeah, we tried to get them up, but they were for last week for the new screensavers, but they were busy. So it's a $9 computer. They've raised $1.5 million, $9 at a time, 28,848 backers. So it's like a Raspberry Pi, right?
Chip, world's first $9 computer.
It's a cheaper Raspberry Pi.
VGA or HDMI.
Chip does computer things. Save your documents to Chip's onboard storage. Surf the web over Wi-Fi. Play games with a Bluetooth controller. But wait.
If a $9 computer could do this, what do we need Project Internet.org for?
It makes Chip portable. Take Chip, put it in connectivity. Chip, and you can use Chip.
Connectivity is the tough part, isn't it?
You might have noticed.
This is kind of weird, isn't it? Because it's like, they're going to make the money on the cables, aren't they?
Because we built Chip to fit into your projects.
And we're so excited to see what you can do with a $9 computer. Kickstarter, we need your help.
We're going to have them on this week.
This week they're going to be on this new screen.
That's what Jerry just confirmed.
Good. Watch Saturday.
Make the $9 computer coming up. Reality. And back Chip on Kickstarter today.
They still have 16 Thanks. Days to go. It's not too late. I doubt there's any $9 pledges left. Nope, those are gone. Well, yep, there are. There's still some. You get a... Make your very own $9 computer, includes a chip and a composite cable for maximum bare bones enjoyment. That's cool. Yeah, we'll find out what's going on with that. Let's take another break, I guess. Do you want to go? Why don't you guys look through the rundown and see if there's anything you're interested in?
Sure.
While I talk about something I'm interested in, LegalZoom.com. Are you the next world-famous entrepreneur? Maybe it's not fame you're looking for. You just want to help people. Whatever your motivation, if you're an innovator, it is easier than ever to launch your dream. You know that. LegalZoom's here to help. To help you incorporate or form an LLC to start your business. That's what we did, LLC. Register those trademarks to protect your products and services. We also did that. Apply for a patent to secure your invention. You can do that, too. For a lot less than you'd think at LegalZoom. For over a decade, LegalZoom has helped more than a million entrepreneurs just like you turn their ideas into reality. And we've got a special for the month of May. For a limited time, you can get special savings on any trademark, copyright, or provisional patent application at LegalZoom.com. They can even help you if you have a great idea and you don't know where to turn. Now, they're not a law firm. I want to be clear about this. But you can get advice from LegalZoom's network of independent attorneys in most states. You choose the attorney based on their profile, but unedited reviews as well on LegalZoom.com. So you can get the guidance you need to get your great idea off the ground. LegalZoom does it all for you. I love it. We've done incorporation stuff there. We've done trademarks. Oh, we've done our will. They do that too. Make the smart choice for your business. LegalZoom.com. Don't forget to use the word TWIG, T-W-I-G, in the referral box at checkout to get the special discount. LegalZoom.com, promo code T-W-I-G. We thank them so much for their support of this week in Google. Weird. We talked about this on Security Now yesterday. Mobile operators in Europe are saying we're going to block online advertising, kind of ad block for you.
Talk about net unneutral.
Well, it's the examples they give are a little scary of, you know, free games that are ad supported and they just take the ad right out. You didn't really want that, did you? So what's the story here. This is, again, this is Europe. It comes to stories from Financial
Times. It's a report. It's sources. You know, yeah. Who knows?
Although the Financial Times says one European wireless carrier has already installed the blocking software in its data centers and plans to turn it on before the end of the year. Comes from an Israeli startup called Shine. I mean, the details are pretty good here. Yeah. Tens of millions of mobile subscribers around the world will be opting into ad block by the end of the year, said the chief marketing officer of Shine. If this scales, it could have a devastating impact on the online advertising industry. And he says that with a smile.
And every site supported by advertising.
Well, that's what worries me a little bit. And it wouldn't affect us, but the video that they show, let me see if I can find this technology, shows them just stripping the ads out of stuff.
So this is like the next toxic version of the internet.org problem of putting proxies in the middle.
Right.
Yeah, it is. Right. It is.
And, some of the carriers have done this, did this kind of thing. I think they've done ad injection rather than ad stripping.
Yeah, they put ads in.
One of the Canadian ones did, didn't they? As I recall.
Yep.
Yeah, there was one long ago. There was one 10 years ago. I think I mentioned the show before that we fought it at Condé Nast along with other big publishers and won in the United States. You couldn't take over our page and do something to with a browser add-on.
Shine says, eliminating intrusive ads is a consumer right, even if it undermines the business model of online publishers that rely on advertising. Online advertising is out of control. and it's polluting the user experience.
How ridiculous.
Well, but, I'm not completely unsympathetic. It can be annoying, can't it? We were just talking about pop-ups and the X's.
Well, the equivalent would be if your cable system cut out the ads for you. You didn't have to fast forward. Just did it for
you. That's a good point. Yeah.
Well, we had that. It was called TiVo.
You got to do it, though.
Well, but they had a version that would actually like find the ads and skip them. And then they're like, no, you're going to be shut down if you do that. So then they had the 30-second skip forward button, and they took that out, too.
Yeah. Let's see if I can find this.
So you actually have to fast forward them.
Website, because it's kind of wild. Well, it also brings down the size. Look at this. This is also from Shine. A 5-minute session of a gaming app with ads, 5 megabytes of data downloaded, 50 kilobytes without the ad. So there's maybe that's why the carriers.
That's why they're doing
it. They want to eliminate data. Yeah. Huh.
They'll do lower resolution versions of photos next.
Ad blocking is a right, says the CMO, Roy Carthy. Boy, it just shows you. I can't disagree with him, but at the same time, I worry about. Well, there's lots of free games that are ad supported. Those are going to go away.
Right. I mean, it is a problem. I mean, but it ties back to the instant articles thing as well, which I know we talked about at some length last week.
Yeah.
But they're saying. You know, the actual argument is, wow, you publishers have really made a mess of your website, so let us clean that up for you.
Isn't this, though, under American net neutrality?
This is being done by somebody else.
Right.
Sorry,
in the U.S., under net neutrality, you're interfering with bits upon their appointed rounds, and it's on neutral.
Interesting.
It depends where you're doing it. Yeah, that's the question. And the problem is, you know, if I'm doing it client side, if I'm running an ad blocking thing in my browser that basically sits there and gives me nothing every time it fetches things on the blacklist of advertisers, which is basically how most of them work, then that is not affecting net neutrality directly, but it is affecting the revenue model.
If it happens on the proxy side, then it's
right. So it's a question
prejudicial to certain kinds of bits.
But it depends where you're putting the proxy. I potentially want to put things through proxy sometimes. You know, using that Google GWT proxy that I linked earlier will do that. It'll take ads out of a lot of things because it's stripping out JavaScript and large images.
Uh-oh.
And Flash. You know, so if I think of some large ad-infested site, TechCrunch. If I put TechCrunch through the Google app, Google proxy, all the ads have gone.
Yeah, but that's you doing that. That's different than a carrier doing it. And, of course, the suspicion is that the carrier may at some point say, if you would like, hey, TechCrunch, if you would like your ads to go through to the viewers, we could arrange that for a small fee.
Right, a lot of these issues, you know, go around in circles like this. You know, part of the reason that instant articles is attractive is that it is stripping out a lot of this cruft that makes these websites.
It's no question, users don't want all that junk, right?
Right, and so that is, and we go through these cycles in technology as well. So when we went to mobile websites, the MDOT version of the website was effectively doing that. You were booting a version of the website that didn't bring the browser to its knees because the mobile phones weren't capable of it. And so that was a way to get out from under the weight of Conway's law that makes your website turn into a mirror of your org chart and have anybody able to inject, you know, extra revenue, allegedly revenue generating stuff into it, which is the problem that the publishers have. And so instant articles is another iteration of that, where Facebook is saying, okay, we're going to write a special browser that is really fast and responsive because it's ignoring all the craft that your business department is making you put in, but we'll give you a little loophole to put in some certain kinds of ads that fit in with our worldview here.
This is because, you know, this exists because users hate the all the junky ads. So but at the same time, users don't trust what's going on because it's in the long run not in your interest for a variety of reasons. Gardner in our chat room is telling me that Shine, the Israeli company, is financed by Three, the UK mobile carrier.
Oh, jeez. Uh-huh.
So there you have it. Now we know. But isn't that the temptation if you're an ISP? And, boy, this one looks good because you can always say to your customers, see what a great experiencing we're giving you?
Well, you know, it is an issue between, you know, with these sites that have had this sort of cruft creep, that is a problem.
Yeah.
So
advertisers brought this on themselves. And so did sites. They brought it on themselves.
Well, it's the sites more than the advertisers. But the advertisers, you know,
Push. They keep pushing. It's up to the sites to say, no, I want to protect the experience of my readers.
Right. I talked to somebody recently on a certain site that's doing membership stuff, and they said that the conversion rate, going after people who had ad blockers and saying, would you like to join, actually got a very high conversion rate.
Would you like to join?
You want to support the site.
Oh.
You're feeling guilty about blocking the ads.
Yeah, if you're blocking the ads.
So instead, I'll give you money.
Give us $1 a month.
It's like Amanda Palmer.
The people
came up to her and said, right. I ripped your CD. I'm sorry. Here's $10.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But that's the thing. Do they give those subscribers of...
Catbot! Get that!
Catbot! I've got a pop-up cat.
Yeah. That's a cat pop-up. That was a cat takeover of Kevin's video feed.
Exactly. If they're targeting the ad block people, do they then serve them a version that doesn't got ads in, or do they still have to keep running their own ad blocker to keep the ads out?
That's an interesting question.
Because, you know, that's a quid pro quo that you know I would be happier with, which is like, oh yeah, okay, you know,
you're happy for the first five sites, but how many sites a day do you visit? Do you want to pay each of them $1 a month?
No.
There's a reason why there's ad supported media.
Sure, no, yeah. There's a reason there's ad supported media, but you know, you can amortize it over different numbers of users. That's the point. You don't have to get a fraction of a penny for every viewer. You could get some money from some of the viewers, and that would work out. That's the thing that we have learned from Kickstarter and Patreon on these things.
And also, we should learn
you can get by with some people paying.
We could also learn from Google that plain text ads don't bother people as much.
Right.
You know, maybe they don't work
relevant
as well.
And relevant ads.
Yeah. Oculus has sent out invites. I think we have one somewhere lying around for a special event, June 11th. We're trying to decide, should we cover this? What's it going to be? Facebook owns the Oculus Rift. That's a VR helmet. Is this going to be the announcement of an actual product or what? Rift is what the invite says.
So at the same time, up above, Google moved the head of search design to Cardboard.
Yeah.
So there's a VR, AR war. It's
waking up. Yeah. Do you think, I actually predicted this on Sunday, we'll see at Google I.O., we'll see some AR. I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm sure you will.
Yeah. Not VR, but AR. So I'm curious what's going on here. Maybe you could... Maybe you can pre-order this.
Just to be sure here, is Cardboard just AR or is it also
Cardboard's
VR?
Cardboard's VR only.
Cardboard's VR.
VR only. Okay.
Yeah.
Well don't,
but Google does have some VR, some AR technology.
We also might see more VR then.
I personally am not sold on the VR thing.
No, I'm just saying we might see more of it. I mean, again.
Oh, yeah, Google's going to do VR too. Sure. Cardboard.
Yeah, there's investment in Cardboard. Right?
They they shipped Cardboard at the last Google I.O.
Yep.
And of course, I wish we could see sales numbers for the Galaxy Gear VR, but that's Samsung selling a cheap. It's only a couple $100 because it's really just a plastic holder for your smartphone, your Galaxy S5, your it's a Note 4, and then there's an S6 one. Glass is not AR either, I should point out. It looked like glass might be augmented reality, but it's not. It's just a little screen over your eyebrow.
Why is that not augmented reality?
It's superimposed. It's a heads-up display. It's augmenting reality. I guess it depends what you mean.
Well, yeah, the direction. When it's giving you directions and saying, "Oh, turn left up there."
That's just putting your phone interface over your...
I know, but it's still AR, isn't it?
All right, Kevin, is it AR?
Is which AR?
Glass.
Sorry. Not really. I mean, it is, you know, it's AR in the same way that having a phone is AR. But it's not doing overlays.
But you've seen, maybe we haven't, the browser that you can run on your phone where it uses the camera and it superimposes on top of the picture information about the businesses on the street. That's to me what I think of as augmented reality, whereas you're looking, and glasses would be even better. You're looking at something and more information is provided you or a user interface or something like that. I feel like glasses, and that was kind of the disappointment for me. I was hoping it was augmented reality, but as soon as we saw it, it was just really a little screen over your eyebrow.
Yeah, I mean, there are definitional arguments about it, but that's...
Right. Well, you know,
There's... Because if the information that's coming up is location aware and has some sense of what you're looking at, even if it isn't trying to do an actual realistic overlay, that's still potentially useful. You know, that's like the Terminator view where it puts up little captions on things. You can imagine that as a form of AR that is more practical than I'm going to replace other people's faces with masks and things, or you know, those kinds of ideas. But you know, you could do like superimposed name tags on people, which is allegedly something Google built and then backed away from.
Oh, really? Previously. Oh, yeah. Interesting.
Huh. Facial recognition to identity, yeah.
But even more than that, what I'd love to know, you know, reputation score, email address, whatever, you know, that would be great. So Google had that and thought, oh, crap.
Creepy line. What was it, Kevin? You did the Creepy and Croft creepy line.
Well, Creepy Croft is a different problem, but yeah, that's a...
I know, I just like the alliteration, that's all. It was
Creepy and Croft creepy line, I like that, yeah.
Letter to the President from Google, Apple, and others. Dear President Obama, went out yesterday. Washington Post obtained the letter. We, the undersigned, represent a wide variety of civil society organizations dedicated to protecting civil liberties, human rights, and innovation online, as well as technology companies, trade associations, and security and policy experts. We are writing today to respond to recent statements by some administration officials regarding the deployment of strong encryption technology in the devices and services offered by the U.S. technology industry. We urge you, it says in bold, to reject any proposal that U.S. companies deliberately weaken security of their products. We request the White House instead focus on developing policies that will promote rather than undermine the wide adoption of strong encryption technology. Such policies will in turn help to promote and protect cybersecurity, economic growth, and human rights, both here and abroad. It's my guess that these signatories have some weight with, particularly Google and Apple. ACLU's in here, the Bill of Rights Defense Committee, the Anti-Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee, the Center for Democracy and Technology. It's quite a little demand progress. EFF, of course, EPIC, of course, the Free Software Foundation. They actually got Richard Stallman to sign this, I guess. The GNOME Foundation, Adobe, Apple, Automattic, that's Matt Mullenweg's WordPress company, Cisco, Coinbase, Cloudflare, Flare. Dropbox, yeah, Evernote, Facebook.
They know what they're talking about.
Huh?
It's a good list of people who know what they're talking about with software security.
Google. Yeah. Hewlett-Packard.
I say God bless Edward Snowden.
Microsoft. Yeah, this whole conversation wouldn't even be going on.
Nope.
Hal Abelson at MIT. Jacob Applebaum from the Tor Project. Steve Belevin, one of the great security. These are the top security researchers in the world. Whitfield Diffie of the Diffie-Hellman algorithm.
Yep.
These are, you know, big names. You don't get bigger names than this. And they all agree. Seems like it's a no-brainer.
It's a heck of a list.
And then on the other side, you have the NSA. Bruce Schneier, yeah. Phil Zimmerman, creator of PGP. So anyway, that letter went to the president yesterday. See what happens. Anything else, you fellas? Oh, I know what I wanted to talk about. I want to talk about MicroPub, since we've got Kevin Marks on here.
Right.
Kevin's doing the work of the angels, I think, with IndieWeb. He's one of many, of course. It's not all him. But IndieWebCamp.com, you can find out more about the IndieWeb. And he posed a question on his Twitter last week for you, Jeff. We were talking on the show last week about how Medium incents people like you to put stuff there because of their interface. Because it's such a pleasure to write. And Kevin, you were saying, "Well, if that's all you want, we can give you that."
Well, that was the thing. There was an indie web camp in Dusseldorf last week, because we're doing them all different places. And Aaron Parecki built a Medium-alike editor for MicroPub.
Let me show Jeff. What's cool about this is now I'm using Known. We talked to Ben and Aaron on a show a while, like maybe a year ago now, with Known.com. And so because Known supports something called MicroPub, which is a protocol with does it use OAuth? I think it does.
Yes.
That allows me to authenticate with a MicroPub endpoint, in this case IndieWeb. I can just merely enter in my properly configured website, and I'm going to do that, at this Quill site. And once I authenticate, and you see I can authenticate via Twitter, Google Plus, GitHub. That's because I've set that up. Or by phone, but let's just do Google Plus. I usually use the phone. It'll send me. It's really cool. It'll send me. I can do that right now. It'll send me a text message with a four-digit code, and when I enter in that four-digit code, it'll authenticate, as it has, and now I'm in Quill. But this is what Kevin wanted to show you is the editor, the Quill editor. Let me launch this.
So you have to click on the editor thing at the bottom.
Yeah, I did, but it's slow. Hold on. No, let's do it again. Waiting. There we go. This looks a little like Medium, doesn't it, Jeff?
Yeah.
Looks a lot like Medium because it's based on a JavaScript open source clone of the Medium editor.
So mark a word.
Watch this. You're going to love this.
Whoop. There it is.
Bold, italic. This is a link. It automatically formats it all. H1, H2.
Oh, no H3. That's it.
I can also do it as code if I'm doing a code editor. This is really nice.
Medium, but it's hidden.
It is.
Yeah. Can I drag images into it too? That's one thing Medium does nicely.
Do return.
And then, well, here, let me posting. I'll just write a little posting from Quill. We're demoing this on Twig, and I guess I should really make that a URL, shouldn't I? So we'll do a little link here to http://twit.tv/twig. Check that, and then publish it. And clicking publish now will send a request to your MicroPub endpoint. So I'm doing this from my browser and from quill.p3k.io. And it's posted, and now if I go to my website, wow, magically, this is my known site. That post is there, which is really cool. Aaron has also written a tool called Own Your Gram that will actually take things like this, which I posted on Instagram, and copy it to my blog. So the idea of all of this, and the reason I'm strongly encouraging Jeff to consider other choices is. And I realized then, Jeff, your whole time you've been writing, your stuff has been in somebody else's hands.
Not my blog.
But even if you do, you've been writing for magazines and newspapers, you're used to the notion that stuff you write goes somewhere else. I think Kevin will support me on this idea that the idea of IndieWeb is that it'd be great if you had your own website where all your stuff lived. But was syndicated
In addition to distributing anywhere else, that's the model I want for media.
But Medium doesn't
put
do
it
that.
On Facebook. I'm saying the
media
Facebook
in general. Right. Yeah,
media.
Yeah.
Put it on Facebook. Put it on Twitter. Put it on Instagram. Put it everywhere. Fine, but have your own home version of it, which is what these guys do, which is wonderful.
Quill did a nice job, by the way, of embedding your tweet, Kevin. I wasn't sure what would happen if I pasted the embed code in it and knew exactly what to do, which is great.
Yeah, no, it also does image insertion.
It does. Okay.
Which it does by data URLs, which is a wonderful bit of HTML voodoo, which means it can inject images directly into the HTML it's sending over, which is kind of
the other thing that's cool about this is you can comment on somebody else's blog if you have the URL, and if its blog is an IndieWeb, you know, micropub supporting blog, there's some nice stuff. It's syndication of comments as well as content.
So the comment stuff, that isn't micropub, that's WebMention.
WebMention, okay.
So the point of the IndieWeb stuff is we've been building a lot of very, very focused, very small protocols for doing these different pieces.
Yeah.
So micropub uses IndieAuth, which is the authorization thing you saw, to prove that it's your site.
Right.
Then it lets you post to your site,
right,
which means we can build a variety of tools that will let us post to the sites, including this new Quill editor, including Own Your Gram and so on. And also mobile clients and whatever. But it's a sort of general posting API.
Yeah,
a
very simple one that's based on HTML forms. Because, of course, I can use Known's own, you know, mobile bookmark to post to it. But yes. This is another little indie web project called MobilePub that gives. So this is an app that's on my Android device that when I post will post to my blog, which is kind of wild.
Yes,
but
again, that's using the MicroPub API and posting it from an app.
Right, yeah. And I can this is what I really like. So you want to do Facebook style likes? If I have the URL that I'm liking, I could paste that in here, and this will actually syndicate to that blog, put a like up there, which is fantastic.
Yes. So that's the point is that we're building enough of these protocols that we can start plugging them together and have this thing work.
Yeah.
And there was another thing I wanted to show you, which is a new one.
Oh, good.
If you go to silo.pub.
All right. SILO.PUB.
Yep. So the point of this is a micropub bridge that goes to certain hosted sites.
Ah.
So Tumblr, WordPress, and Blogger are hosted blogging sites. This is WordPress.com, not WordPress.org. And the problem is you can't necessarily install code on those. So what this does is it gives you a way to add micropub to these hosted sites.
Because they have an API.
Because they have an API, and you have to do a little bit of work. There's a little bit of setup work you have to do to put the right headers into the templates, but it walks you through how to do that as well, which means you can then use these micropub clients with these hosted services as well. So you can use those
That's
editors
cool.
or Onogram and so on with those. So it's another sort of extension of this model. And again, this was one of these ideas where we were chatting about it in the IRC channel, and Carl's and I said, oh, it would be nice if we could do this. And then Ryan said, well, this is how you could do this. And then Carl said, oh, I'll go and do that then and built this. So,
That's nice. I love it. If you know how to code, the world is your oyster. Just stay up with web technologies. So
somebody in the chat is asking, how about Medium integration for this?
Yeah.
Medium doesn't have an API.
That's why you got to have APIs.
Well, we're not supposed to Medium.
But when you cut and paste from text, it's very good. It picks up all the links. It picks up everything.
Yeah, no, it has. If you click on the thing on the right hand of Medium, there is a import post from URL thing or something like that. And that you can then give it that the URL of the IndieWeb post, and it'll do a reasonable job of pulling it in.
Oh, that's good.
Yes. It's pretty damn impressive.
But it would be nice to have a full API as opposed to.
It'd be nice for us to be able to do it directly. Yeah, but that's a. Also, it'd be nice for, you know, Medium did announce this week that they're going to start letting you have Medium hosted on your own domain, which is a step in the right direction. That's good. They've only done it for a couple of big publishers so far. They said they're going to let you do that. So that's encouraging, but they're still hosting it, and you don't get much control over markup and things. So that would be a step towards the IndieWeb idea, and it's always good to let people have control of their own domains. But the challenge is you wouldn't be able to plug in all these. It's because they haven't got the hooks for us to do that.
It is currently silly, difficult for most people to do this. You have to do all sorts of little fiddly stuff. And I guess it always will be a little bit.
We're trying to work out ways to make it simpler. So,
It's not that
Known
hard.
Is obviously one very great simplification because it gives you a standalone thing you can install or a hosted service that will let you get these IndieWeb features. we're also encouraging people to integrate them into other systems. There's a series of WordPress plugins. So if you've got self-hosted WordPress, you can install a set of IndieWare plugins and get these features. So I think that might suit you, Jeff. I think your Buzz Machine is self-hosted, right?
Yeah.
On WordPress.
By the way, I went to a meeting today at the New York Times from Poynter and the Knight Foundation on annotation. Companies
right.
like Genius there. And annotation is a fascinating structure of wanting to leave comments on top of things in a way that's open and having multiple conversations around the same thing. And then I argued, too, that embedding content is like a reverse annotation, because where was this embedded? What does that tell you about the content? A huge new layer of possibilities there. That'll be fascinating.
Yes. I mean, that's one of the that's another set of bits and pieces that we've been doing in the IndieWeb side to try and think about this. So the idea of web mentions can work for annotations. There's an example. See if I can find the link for this. Kartik built this thing called Marginalia. I'll put it in the IRC. And this does that thing where it uses the frag mention idea, which was the thing I discussed last time we talked about annotation, which you put the piece you're linking to in the URL after the hash. So it says, I'm linking to this piece of text. So if you scroll right. down this post, you'll see little green things at the end of the paragraphs, little speech bubbles. They're a little subtle. And if you click them, it'll pop out the comment in line.
And anybody could post that.
And that is a post that...
Wow.
Did you find one?
I don't see any.
Yeah, they're not green bubbles, they're just bubbles.
I think if you go to Fragmention, scroll down there, just past Fragmention, there's one at the bottom of that paragraph.
By the way, you were
quoted, geez, Kevin. I see, yeah.
At today's meeting, Kevin, you were quoted Fragmention. People loved the name.
Oh, good. Yeah, so you can see, he's put this little speech bubble there. If you click that, it's exposing the comment. But the comment is actually on somebody else's site that is linking back to this.
Oh, that's amazing.
It's using the frag mention to say, I'm targeting this paragraph. And it's using a web mention to say, I commented on this paragraph.
Wow.
So we've basically built the components to do this. So far, Kartik has built this little Marginalia script to do this on his site. And I'm not sure that many other people have deployed this yet. But again, we have this set of building blocks that says, I want to refer to a piece of this page. That's the frag mention part. I want to let you know when I've mentioned you. That's the web mention part. And then by combining those two, he's able to build something like this that works very nicely. It's like the Medium comments that let you comment on the paragraph.
Right.
Except that it doesn't all have to be in a database on one site. It's a distributed way of doing that same idea.
More syndication. That's nice.
Right. So the point of this is that by spending... The point of the IndieWeb stuff is to think about how we can do this so that it doesn't all have to be hosted in one database. But we define a protocol that will work between two sites. And because they're independent implementers, they try and keep the protocols small and not overcomplicate them. But then you can start chaining together to do these interesting kinds of things. And that then potentially you can build these bridges that go to the silos, or the silos can start implementing these protocols as well. There's nothing to stop Medium from adding the markup we need to do this, or making this stuff something that will work across site. They're quite capable of doing that. The question is whether they want to give people that power or not, and that's the that's the trade-off. But if they've already got a mechanism for accepting comments, arbitrary comments on paragraphs and people, it's just another way of them being posted.
There's no secure. Is this open any security issues?
Well, your site is in control of what it posts, so right. The comments it's posting there, it has parsed the HTML of the commenting page and decided which piece to post. So it is doing it's not just injecting an iframe with the whole page in. It's constructing the piece that is the comment.
Yeah.
So there's a potential injection issue if that script isn't sanitizing, but that's no more than
that's
any other commenting system.
Yeah, and it happens everywhere. Yeah.
Yeah, no, we fairly well know how to deal with taking HTML from one page and putting it in another page. Right. Now that's something that yes, you can get it wrong, but we know how to sanitize that stuff now.
If you want to know more about this, indiewebcamp.com, and go to an IndieWebcamp if you have an inclination. If you're intrigued.
I should also give a plug for the Homebrew Website Club, which is down there in the bottom of that page. They're held every other Wednesday, and there's actually Homebrew Website Clubs today in New York, San Francisco, and Portland. The New York one is starting soon, I think, 6:30. Click on the New York one.
Uh-oh, rush. I gotta go.
Where is the New York one?
If you click on that one, there's a link to New York somewhere in there. All right, here we go. It is.
At Schnipper's Quality Kitchen. Get down. Oh. An 8th and 41st.
That's right at the corner.
Schnipper's.
Is that near you?
Yes, the New York Times building.
Hey, drop in.
Which is next door.
Wow.
Jeff, drop by. I think it's when we finish this show, you can drop in. I think it's starts at 7:30, I think, but there may be I think there's go back a page. There's a time and date on it.
It says 10:30, but I bet you it's adjusting for my.
No, that's
my time. There. New York City. Quiet writing hour, 6:30 to 7:30. And the meeting begins at 7:30.
So that's writing hour.
drop in, Jeff. They'd love to see
just
you.
Just go and write. Well, wow, open Medium, and they'll see what happens.
They're writing. Well, get out of here.
Well, the quiet writing hour. This was a thing that Andy thought of, which was we set this thing for 6:30 so you could get there after work, but some people could get there a bit earlier, and then they could work on something they were working on.
That's cool.
Before we have the public phase of it.
I like this.
Schnipper's has good burgers.
Oh, good. You got dinner and Indie Web. I really like the idea, and I know it seems kind of countercultural. It's a little countercultural.
Yeah,
it's an antidote to the highly corporatized commercial web. A web, it's made of people. I like the idea.
But it's also thinking, you know, it's tackling a lot of the same issues we've talked about how do you give access to the web to more people? How do you make it easy for them to publish?
Right.
But with an answer that isn't, everyone should use Facebook, everyone should use Google Plus or whatever. It's how can we do this in such a way that means that you're not required to log into a large company's server?
And when you see these $9 computers and Raspberry Pis that are completely capable of running a good quality web server, it just seems like there's... We could have a much more human-scaled, fragmented web, and fragmented in the best possible way instead of a monolithic web, a Facebook web. This is the antidote.
You still need to route to the servers, which can be tricky, but
figure out a way.
The other thing is that cloud servers aren't expensive these days either, so being able to put this up on...
That's probably better, I suppose.
Indeed, I think Google just lowered its prices by 30%.
Every house should have a DMZ Ethernet port in the wall. That you could plug your Raspberry Pi server into.
There you go.
Yeah.
Get V6 working. That'd be nice.
then gosh, your refrigerator could be your web server. Everything could be your web server. Anyway, I always want to give a plug for this. And so people glaze over and think, I don't know what this is. Can I just use Facebook? That's fine. Go ahead and just use Facebook. But there are some few proud hippies out there who want to kind of.
But it's also that. Just because you're using Facebook doesn't mean we can't communicate. That's the other part of this, is that part of this is that the idea of Posse, publisher on your own site, share elsewhere, is that we can write it on our site and then send the link over to Facebook, and then you can see it on Facebook. But the other subtle thing is the stuff that has been set up with Bridgy, which translates the Facebook comments into web mentions, so those can be come back to your site as well. So you're able to move this stuff back and forth between the different servers. Now, that gets harder when the silos change things. Facebook has just made it a lot harder for us to do that by changing the API recently.
Oh,
great. Yeah.
Nice.
And I'm not sure that was necessarily intentional. I think that's more that they didn't think about this use case when they changed their API. They're reacting to the perception people have that Facebook is too public and they want to give people more control over what happens to it. But what that ends up doing is making it harder for us to take the bits that actually are public and make sense of them. So that's been a bit of a shame. And that's that was one of the most fascinating things watching people sign up for Known, because part of what Known does is when you sign up for the site is it asks you how do you want to connect it to your social media, what do you want to publish out, I'll give you buttons on the bottom of your post to let you share out which ones go where, and a lot of people are really really wary of clicking that connect to Facebook button, because in their mind publishing on the web is kind of public. But publishing on Facebook is really public, because then it goes straight to the people who actually know you. So they were much more concerned about connecting to Facebook than they were with setting up a website.
That's so funny, since you have more control over Facebook than you do over the web.
Here's, by the way, this is my site.
But you don't, really. Conceptually, you don't. In your head, you don't understand quite what Facebook... This is, you know, when you watch ordinary people use this rather than, you know, those of us who actually understand ACLs and things. In their head, if I post something to Facebook, it's going to go straight to my mum, and my mum is going to complain about it.
Right.
There's a mental model of how that works, and you know that's probably true because my mum on Facebook follows me and my sisters, and that's about it. So anything I post on there, she will see. My sons have a more nuanced attitude to this, and they understand the stuff. So I don't see everything they post on Facebook. But that is the mental model is Facebook is this place that is a social performance to a set of people you already know, whereas the web is a place where you can talk in a less focused way. And that's a really interesting reversal. And I think that's part of the trying to adjust that is what was the thinking behind the new Facebook API changes. But in practice, we end up with the worst of both worlds. We have a set of people who don't want to connect to Facebook because it could be scary, and then they break the API so we can't do the things we were doing with it as well. So it's a... It has been a step backwards in that respect.
Now I understand why Ben and Aaron Joe are slow to include some of the features we asked for. They're busy fighting Facebook's API changes every few months. This is I'm on my own site. I hosted it with known.com, but I could host this. In fact, I was hosting it locally for a while. I just decided I didn't want to pay for a server. I can write a post here, and then because I've already connected Twitter and Facebook and LinkedIn, I can automatically, and if it were an image, I could add Flickr and so forth. And now when I publish this, it goes to all of them and stays on my website. And you could do long articles too. This is just a short status update. So I think that's very cool. And I like it that it's centered on my own site as opposed to those sites.
Oh. And it just showed up in the IndieWeb IRC channel as well.
Why is that?
Because you said IndieWeb.
And the hashtag? Wow.
And the IRC channel looks for...
That's hysterical. All right, let's take a break, come back, tips, numbers, tools. Let me show you all that stuff at the back of the book. Let me tell you, this is a great solution for anybody who's doing a mobile site or a mobile app to add payment APIs to that. Unbelievable. So simple, just a few lines of code. And all of a sudden, you're accepting Bitcoin or Apple Pay or PayPal or credit cards securely, easily. Braintree is amazing. No wonder Uber uses them. Airbnb uses them. Lyft uses them. Hotel Tonight uses them. Everybody, Living Social uses them. GitHub started in the very early days and continues to use Braintree as their payments API. And look at the new V.0 SDK. It works with all your favorite languages. It works easily, simply. They've got great customer service, simple integration. You'll be ready to receive payments instantly. Try the sandbox if you don't believe me, and you can literally see how it would look with your code. And Braintree's continuous support plus fast payouts means you'll be ready. They'll be with your company from the first dollar to the billionth dollar. Braintree, turning companies into unicorns all over the place. They really are amazing. I want you to check it out. It's easy to do. Just go to braintreepayments.com/twig. Yeah, braintreepayments.com/twig. And a little incentive to make it easy for you. Your first $50,000 in transactions will be fee-free. How do you like that? braintreepayments.com/twig. PayPal, Apple Pay, Bitcoin, Venmo, credit cards, all with one simple integration. It's a great solution. If you haven't tried it, try it today. braintreepayments.com/twig. You're watching This Week in Google with Jeff Jarvis from the City University of New York, the author of Geeks Bearing Gifts, What Would Google Do in Public Parts? He blogs at buzzmachine.com. Kevin Marks is also here. He's a legend in the micro formats and standards business. Nobody better. KevinMarks.com. Kevin, you've shown us a bunch of stuff. I think you're off the hook if you don't have a tool or a tip or anything. But if you've got something, we already showed you, in fact, I see your links, silo.pub and Quill. We're done.
I want your muted sound maker.
Yeah. I'll show you that. Yeah, go ahead, Kevin.
Let me unmute myself.
Yes.
There's another little app that a friend of mine has built, and I've helped him build some of it, which is it's called Will Someone. So it's ask.willsomeone.com.
Ask.will.someone.
No, ask. No second dot. Ask.willsomeone.com.
All right. I've got it. Will someone sign in with Google? That's the first one. I better sign in, right?
Yeah.
All right. Yes, I will sign in with Google. All right. Allow.
Yes, this is Google.
Here we go. Now, will someone, my name. What is this? What am I going to do here?
So it's basically a to-do list, except that a task manager, except that you can give the tasks to other people to do for you as well. So you can ask people to help you.
Love it.
Oh.
So, wash my windows. Okay, that's the task. I'm going to add that. So I didn't have any tasks. So now I have one. Okay. I can add details. I can add a due date. And now I can ask somebody to do it?
So if you hit the ask button, you can share it out publicly, or you can click on the will of someone, cool. Then it becomes a global task that appears on the front
that's
page of the site.
Hysterical.
So it's a sort of simple idea, but it's this is Chris Huer who's had this idea that the challenges with task managers, you everyone has their own, but it's nice sometimes to ask for help too. So that's the thinking behind this. So this is fairly new. It's been out a couple of weeks, but try it out. Let me know what you think.
Ask.willsomeone.com. Right?
Yeah.
Ask.willsomeone.com. That's cool. Is this another indie webby kind of thing?
I helped build it, so it has some indie web features in it. So it does have the markup so that you can subscribe to it with indie web feed readers and things. But it's not directly indie web. It's a silo app, but it's indie web friendly. That's the phrasing we use.
I get that first picture page I was looking at. Now I understand. That's my profile.
So yes, that was your profile. Sir.
Yeah, so I have to customize that a little bit with pictures and so forth.
Yeah.
Jeff, you got a number for us?
Yes, I do. I found it interesting. There was a DNAIndia.com said there was a survey of 12,000 Indian students in grades 8 to 12. 90% of them use Facebook. No surprise. Coming in at number two, Google Plus was 65%. Number three, Twitter at 44%. So maybe Google Plus is popular in ways that people make fun of us for it. Maybe it's a little more popular elsewhere in the world. I don't know.
Huh. Just like Orkut.
Exactly.
Well, I think that was, they did migrate the Orkut users to Google Plus, didn't they?
So there you go.
Maybe where that is.
Is that it?
That's it. Yeah. I don't think there's anything wrong with Google Plus functionality-wise. It's fantastic.
Not at all. No, it's wonderful. Wonderful.
I wish it would. I don't know.
I see more indie web friendly. Elgin there doesn't give up.
Yeah, make it more. Give it. You know what? Do you think that was a mistake that they never gave us a right API?
Yes.
Well, they gave us one, but it was weird. You could write to it, but it was like uploading photos from your phone. They would disappear in a place that only you could see, and then they were very strict about not giving access to it. So that was, I think that was a reaction to what happened with Buzz, which people used it as a place to syndicate to, and so they were trying to avoid that and make it more native, but I'm not sure that was completely successful. And it would be nice if there was a way of doing it more generally.
This article just came in. No, it didn't just come in. This is an old article. Never mind. It is not a new article. Let me show you Google Tone. We didn't use it once. I should have used it. Let me use it real quickly for Ask Someone. So if anybody has Tone installed... ask.willsomeone.com. I'm on the page now. I'm going to press the tone button, and you will hear a sound. A rather pleasant sound that if you have this Google Tone extension installed in Chrome and the speakers turned up and your microphone turned on, will bring you... I know, it's funny, isn't it? Bring you to ask.willsomeone.com. Your browser just goes there. They say this was something just cobbled together in an hour or two as a joke, kind of as a lark, as a laugh. Kevin, what do you think that tone? How is that tone communicated? It doesn't seem like it would have enough in there to communicate like a full URL. How's that working?
Well, it sounds like it might do. I mean, the question is there more than one tone going there? But it's probably a URL shortener equivalent.
Yeah. They do a URL shortening. Of course.
My guess is they're doing it's sending something that is like a lookup in their database.
Right.
Because it sounded like.
So the you give them a URL, as I just did, ask.willsomeone.com. It shortens it to, you know, goo.to/13419, and then modulates it somehow.
Then it sends 13419 or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, that would be easy, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Do you think these will get longer as more and more people use tone?
Absolutely. It'll be like the Twitter URL shorteners, where they're now often longer than some URLs. 24 characters after the t.co now.
The tone will go on for hours. Hours. It's nice and short right now. That is funny.
This is like I've got j.mp/k goes to my blog because I cut it on the first day they set up the URL shortener.
Perfect. Yeah.
But now the URLs are very long, so you can't do that anymore.
Perfect. We have our own shortener, twit.to, so we can use some nice short ones.
So you can pick your own namespace out of that. Yeah.
So the use case that Google gives, there really isn't any use case. Actually, we're the best use case. You're listening to a podcast and you turn it up. Yeah, that's actually a good use case.
It's actually a good use case. Well, it's kind of a horrible way to do it, but yeah, it would be nicer.
I mean, it's a good use case for people who actually want to use it. For everyone else,
it's just annoying.
It's annoying.
Yeah. We used something a few years ago called chirp.io that did the same thing for one show. But the use case Google gives is you're in a – this is a terrible use case. You're in an office situation and you want to hand off some websites to your colleagues. Just what you want. Somebody in the office playing out loud, holding up a speaker. That's not a good idea. Anyway. My friends, we have come to the end, the conclusion of this silly little thing. I'm so glad you could be here, Kevin. Always a pleasure and always fun.
Always a pleasure, sir. Yep. Always.
And
it was good to talk to you guys, too.
He's fighting the good fight for IndieWeb. Now you got Quill in your quiver, Mr. Jeff Jarvis. You don't have to use that medium anymore. Yeah, you will.
I was sitting next to two medium people this morning.
Yeah. Because that's the other thing medium brings to the table is a community.
Yes.
Yeah. What you really want is a way to syndicate from your posse, your known blog to Medium. And for that, Medium has to cooperate by giving us an API.
Well, I think we're going to embed stuff around the web more and more and more. And the architecture Kevin is working on enables you to write once and embed multiple times.
There you go.
And that's going to be beneficial.
I like that idea. Yep.
Yes. Now part of the challenge is, what do you embed? How do you just decide what the preview is? And that's what. So if I write a tweet length post that there's a comment on yours, then it's straightforward to work out what to embed. But if I write a full blog post that happens to cite you, then you've got to work out how you construct a preview for that. So that's something that we're experimenting with.
All right, I'm pissed.
What?
I'm pissed.
What?
I just see the story on BuzzFeed. Now I'm pissed. My light's off. I'm double pissed.
We went an entire hour and 51 minutes without a Jeff Jarvis rant.
I didn't get invited to. BuzzFeed reports that The Camp, Google's Sicilian Davos, returns for a second year. The secretive conference known as The Camp.
Oh,
held at a luxurious golf resort in Sicily. And we were not invited.
Who gets invited to that?
Not us.
Wow, look at that beautiful, beautiful bay there. Business leaders, tech luminaries, and celebrities. That's who gets invited. We are none of the above. It's the Illuminati of the Digirati.
Elon Musk, Travis Kalanick, Evan Spiegel, John Doerr, Lloyd Blankfein. Yeah,
it's all the usual suspects.
I guess we're not up there.
Suspects. I don't want to talk to them anymore.
I don't want to be with them.
I would never join a club that would have me as a member.
No, I'd rather be at I.O.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, you're going to be. It's next week. We will be back doing Twig at its usual time, which is 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern time. 2000 UTC on Wednesdays at live.twit.tv. Jeff will be in studio because the following day is Google I.O. And then you're going to go back and go to the keynote, but we'll broadcast the keynote. Google does plan to stream it. You, of course, can watch Google stream. But if you want our commentary on top of Google stream, and Gina Trapani and I and Aaron Newcomb and from All About Android, Ron, what's his name? Richards. will join
us. Call him Ron.
Just Ronnie. Yeah, Ronnie. Will join us, and we will be, and Jason Howell, you're going to go. Mike Elgin's going to go. They're both going down to Google
I.O. Yep.
Good. So coverage, special coverage begins 9:30 a.m. Pacific, 12:30 p.m. Eastern time, 16:30 UTC at live.twit.tv. That is a week from tomorrow. So that's 5/28, May 28th, for our special Google I.O. coverage. I think it's going to be a good Google I.O. I'm excited.
I think it is, too.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting that we don't really know a whole lot about it this time.
Yeah.
I feel like at about this point of the year, you know, leading into Google I.O. week, we feel like we are pretty confident that we know a lot of what Google's going to talk about. We really don't this time around.
So here's the question. On next week, will we say, wow, that was a big surprise? Or will we say, no. Oh, it was an okay I.O.?
I think there's some risk because, you know, last year was kind of an okay I.O. It was nothing really exciting. I think it's going to be kind of like that. But you never know.
Well, we know we're going to get a new version of Android, but we don't know what it'll be.
Yeah, we got a new one last year.
Yeah,
everybody gets a Google refrigerator to take home.
Yeah. I imagine there will be some more VR-ish stuff. I think that is quite a likely thing.
VR, and I hope to see some AR too, because I prefer. I'm more excited about AR.
Mm-hmm. Right.
All right. Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you all for being here. We'll see you next week on This Week in Google.